Hello and welcome to another edition of the Cultural Colchester podcast. I have with me another magnificent guest, and it is a person who needs no introduction. Let's see if I can get the thing to work. Yes. It's Anthony Roberts, Dr. Anthony Roberts from Colchester Arts Centre. Hello, Anne.
Managed to say it in the end then.
I did.
Colchester Arts Centre.
Colchester Arts Centre.
Well done. Yes, Let's quit while we're ahead.
This is the Cultural Colchester podcast, so I think most people will be asking, what are you doing here?
Yeah, you're scraping the barrel now with your list of invitees. Yeah,
absolutely.
You set the bar low, and now it's gotten even lower.
And you have been mentioned in nearly every podcast interview, so I just wondered how much you've been paying these people to mention you and the accent.
Really? Yeah, well,
you have achieved legendary status.
An indication of how moribund their cultural existence is if they reference me.
And you're a doctor, given an honorary doctorate from Colchester Institute.
Yes, doctor of nothing. I think just doctor of doing your job. But I love it. I love the doctorate.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really nice.
You,
just nice. It's,
but you have no other honour currently, because you often get called Sir Anthony or Lord Roberts.
Yes, yes.
It's only a matter of time.
Only a matter of time, surely.
Excellent. Now, before we, I think we've got to go on to some serious
Archbishop stuff. Roberts.
Archbishop Roberts.
Maybe.
Excellent.
Just.
Yes, well, you've got a church.
Yeah.
So that would be good.
Well, I've done a few sermons.
You have. Yeah. Okay. I wanted to talk about a serious
Keep
subject.
Going, Tim. You're doing all right. Keep on message.
A serious subject of Dad's Army.
Excellent.
Now, Dad's Army is you're obsessed with.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because I want to check, actually. I've just put in another offer for a bit on the Dad's Army jigsaw.
Yes.
There's eight of them, and this one's got 10 pieces missing. And I've already got it, but I felt obliged to bet £11.
How many piece jigsaw is it?
It's 350 pieces.
So it's only got 340.
Correct.
If my maths is correct.
You're spot on.
Excellent.
£11 I've offered for that.
What other Dad's Army memorabilia do you have in your collection?
I've got all the books. I've got the books signed by Frank Williams. I've got all the albums apart from 1978, I think. I've got Bill Pertwee's sort of reference thing. I've got both models, Corgi and Dinky, of Jones's van, both in their boxes.
Excellent.
Of course, I've got all the VHS. I've got them all on video, VHS, yeah. And I've got them on DVD in a box that I haven't opened. So it's still got the cellophane on it.
So if Antiques Roadshow ever come back to Colchester, you can take your collection and have it valued.
It'll be worth about, £4.50, I should think.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. Why do you love Dad's Army soap?
Well,
what is it about Dad's Army?
It's just...
Because we all grew up with it.
Yeah, it's just the perfect harmony between scriptwriter and performers. The scriptwriters began to write to the actual characteristics of the actors playing the character, and so there was this kind of mashup between, Arthur Lowe and, Captain Mannering.
Yeah.
In the same way that the scriptwriters Gorton and Simpson started doing it for Hancock, the St. Aloysius.
Yes.
You know, the character Hancock
began
blurred with the real Tony Hancock as they got going. But it's just glorious. And that cast in Dad's Army is,
And you introduced me to the Tony Hancock Appreciation Society. And I renewed my membership. Are you still there?
No, I didn't. I didn't renew membership. I did it as a kind of bit of a whim and a laugh, because I knew you were a fan. So I thought,
love
Tony
Hancock.
I wouldn't.
No, you look. All that week, Tony. But Tony Hancock was a big influence on my father, bless him.
Mm. It's one of those occasions when you look round the room and you think, I'm exactly the same as all these people. How depressing.
Absolutely. Let's go back to your childhood, because this is where some of your career started and your humour comes from.
Okay.
Watford.
Watford. Don't, if you ever, if you haven't been to Watford, don't go. Watford. If
Watford,
you know,
is better than Luton, is all you can say about.
You know, on the train it says, "Don't use this toilet when it's at a station." It should say, "Unless it's Watford," because frankly, you know, it's.
It is a magnificent adjunct to London.
Yeah, it's not a place that makes the soul sing. It's not the prettiest place. But I've got some affection for it anyway, you know.
Yes.
You know, got family still there. Come on, the Hornets.
Yes, we might.
The Golden Boys.
We might get on to them later.
Oh.
So how long did you stay in Watford?
Well, I went to university in Bristol and then I went back to Watford where I was a magician in Woolworths selling trick cards after with a, this is with a joint honours degree from Bristol University and three A-levels and, well, you know, O-levels and all that kind of carry. And then I was a car park attendant.
Excellent.
I'm probably the highest qualified, car park attendant. And I was taught to be rude to the public.
Good. You know, by Watford Council.
Yeah, by the guy that was like, you know, he said, Tony, no, you don't give him any change, Tony. You know, you say, what have they got signs up like that on there for? He don't give him, don't give, have you got any change? No, I haven't got any change. Just wanting to kind of like suck up to George, who was running it. Yeah, they were grumpy and they was, hostile.
What made you leave car park attending? Sounds a great job. Being
Rude
to the public.
Well, I think, you
even
know,
if you were highly qualified.
Yeah, maybe I should go back to it. Probably.
So, after car park,
you can
park
take the man out of the car park, but you can't, you know.
What happened after that then?
I ended up car park. So I went to the job centre after university, and I went to university just because that's, you know, you go to O levels. Do A levels? I never even thought about going to university. Just assumed I would go to university because that's what you do, and then you get a job. And I came out of university. I never really kind of had the now sort of like common sense to think: do I want to do this? What I want to do? I just went down the job centre. Again, my first job was magician, and then car park attendant. But after 2 years of car parking, eventually it occurred to me that maybe there was some higher ambition than sitting in,
really?
Kind of like that I should maybe doing something else. So I left car park attending to do nothing.
Yes. Yes, I'm still working out what I want to do for a living.
Well, I was going to come to that.
Yeah. Perhaps one day I will achieve whatever. I don't know what I want to do. That's the problem.
Car parking?
I did it once in Jaywick.
You'd be very good.
I was very good.
Were you?
Yeah.
What happened?
The car park closed at 5.
Mm.
And some chap, my dad was supposed to be in charge and
right.
The family involved.
Oh.
Some chap turned up at 6:30.
Past six.
And we waited for him.
Really?
And he gave us 10 pence as extra tip.
2 shillings?
Yes.
Wow. Well, so that's a magnificent tip.
My father was not happy with him.
Mm.
But he's a very reasonable man, my dad. So
did you pocket the 2 shillings?
No, Dad did.
Good, because that was seemed to be the tradition
didn't
of the all the car parks. The attendants that I were working with.
Yeah, pocket the money.
Yeah.
So, but we're not talking about me, we're supposed to be talking about you. What did you do?
Well, I went on the Dole in...
the old rock and roll.
Yeah, in London. And then I went to the job centre in London, and there was a job advertised at the Old Bull Art Centre on the... job creation screen. It wasn't enterprise allowance. It might have been called that. Anyway, it was this scheme that the Margaret Thatcher had invented. If you'd been on the Dole for like a year, you could apply for this. And it was a kind of like a part-time position.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of art centres benefited from that in all sorts of different ways. And the unions were dead against it. And it was a terrible kind of thing. And, you know, we were all kind of thinking, this is dreadful. What about real jobs? It worked a treat for me.
Oh,
I can tell you. So
Thatcher to blame for so much, also for getting you.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you can put that on the ticket as well. Anyway, I did
the Old Bull Arts Centre was situated where?
It was in Barnet, North London. And I'd never, that was it. You know, that was the kind of like key for me, because suddenly I found out that you could do it. I had some aptitude for it. I was the marketing person there. Didn't start as a marketing person. They got me in the building team, first of all. So I did some painting and some building stuff. And then I got put into the press team. But I found I had an aptitude to do it. And I loved the work that I was being introduced to. You know, that kind of love of new work. Never seen any contemporary dance before. Stand-up comedy was just starting. Alternative stand-up comedy was starting in the 80s back in London. There was an indie music scene. I mean, I don't mean indie as in what we understand it now to be kind of like shoegazing, jangly, kind of like boys with guitars. But I mean, it was kind of like independent, mm-hmm. as in kind of like more in the punk tradition.
Yes.
Of having a, you know, putting a gigs together in rooms above pubs. And so it was a really exciting time to be introduced to that. And then also someone paid me for it at the end of the week. So this was like magnificent, you know. That was like, you know, one of those moments that I just went down the job centre and saw it to him.
Yeah.
You know.
So how long did you stay at the Old Bull?
I stayed at the Old Bull for about year and a half,
yeah.
And then I went to Salisbury Arts Centre.
Oh, right.
Mm.
Yes. And Salisbury Arts Centre.
I have to point out here, listeners, that Tim is looking increasingly tired and soporific. It started well, but he's like, you can see his eyes glazing over now. Oh, I see, right.
Salisbury poison.
Yeah, oh, of course, yes.
But you the art centre there, is it similar to the art centre?
Yeah, it's a church. And then what happens
there's
in...
There's a pattern emerging.
What happens in art centres and small venues is that when someone leaves, there's no kind of like plan of what can be done or replacement or stuff like that. What tends to happen is like, Nigel's left. Oh, Nigel's left. Oh, well, you sit next to Nigel. Why don't you do what he did? Well, I don't know. I don't know what he did. Okay, but by osmosis, the kind of skill set that Nigel had, whatever he was doing. And so as people left, I got to do more and more. And so I started programming. That means, you know, you can choose what goes on the stage.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like when I thought, well, this is something that I really, you know, this is what this works for me. This is kind of like is a way of being in a creative business mm-hmm. without any having any creative flair yourself. So that's perfect for me. Zero talent.
And you're being uncharacteristic
yeah.
modest.
Nice.
So did you book any because at the Colchester Arts Centre,
yes.
you've booked all these people who've gone on to have stellar careers.
Yeah.
Did you do the same?
Well, in a micro way. One of the first acts, it was a woman called Tanita Tikaram. And she was she was completely unknown.
Yeah.
And I just thought she was quite good. And then, she's completely unknown now, I have to say. But apart from you.
Quite big for a
Yeah, but
years,
like I booked her. And then, like, you know, sort of like 2 weeks later, she was number one, you know, or thereabouts, you know. When the days when they had a hit, parade.
Will have heard.
Tanita Tikaram. So that was one.
Yep.
And then I booked a band called Napalm Death.
Oh, yeah.
When they were on Earache Records before that. And I phoned up Bill Steer was the bassist, I think, at the time.
Yeah.
The original lineup. I don't know what the lineup is now. I think they're still going. But, I mean, and I managed to, they didn't have an agent. It was all kind of like that scene, that band scene was like a mixture between hardcore punks and hippies.
Yeah.
It was a peculiar kind of crossover. So they were kind of like.
They're sort of thrash metal, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, there's got a song called You Suffer.
Yes.
Which is a third of a second long.
Yes. Sounds magnificent.
And yeah, we booked them and they were on the. I got through to the Bill Steer there and,
yes.
and I phoned up this number and it was Bill Steer's mum on a bus. She said, oh, yes, no, he's doing, well, we're all quite excited, really. He started his pop. So who are you? I'm Anthony. I'm just wondering if Bill would be, can I speak to Bill to try and put them?
And so you did?
Yeah, so we did. So we put them on and the place was kind of like absolutely heaving. Salisbury hadn't got hold of the idea of stage diving because we'd been to see them at in the university, London University, and it was nuts. I'd never been to a gig like it, you know. I mean, and I've been through the whole punk things, gobbing and pogoing, and so kind of like all that kind of thing. It was stuff like, but this, was something like nothing else. There were people climbing onto the PA and jumping into the audience from about 20 feet into the. It was just like terrifying and thrilling and like crazy. And anyway, when we put them on in Salisbury, I thought, right, I'll stage dive. But Salisbury hadn't got an idea in the same way. So these people parted like the Red Sea. I've got a photograph of it. And I smashed onto the floor. My glasses rammed into my head. And go, massive bruise on the bridge of my nose. My glasses had crashed onto the floor. It was like, wait, like that.
Splat.
Yeah. A man continuously seconds ahead of his own time.
So how long did you say at Salisbury?
I was there for, let's see, just 2 years, I think. 2 years. Yeah, 2 years.
And,
that's right.
And did Colchester follow Salisbury?
No, then I went back to the Old Bull, which is probably where I'll end up when I finally get rumbled in Colchester. Yeah, I went back to the Old Bull in London for a couple of years. There was a new director at Salisbury, and, the things changed. And I was ambitious as well, and I retained a lot of affection for the Old Bull, kept my eye on it, and the job came up, and so I went back there. Hmm.
And is that where we got you from? We poached you from the Old Bull?
Well, that's where I was working before I came and was interviewed with, I was interviewed by Nigel.
Who you, Nigel, yes, yeah. We heard all about that.
Yeah.
We interviewed Nigel.
Yeah.
And he still gave you the job.
Yeah, I did. Apparently the worry was, because I put in my CV that I used to play the drums, which I did. And the worry amongst the panel was I was going to go off and be a drummer. And I was like, and they addressed this by saying, are you going to go off and be a drummer? And I said, no, because I'm crap at drumming, which is true. But this went down very well with them, the kind of like honesty and the directness of the response, I suppose. And, but I'd had a few interviews for other jobs as being a director before that. But I just didn't look the part, you know. So for the Colchester job, I went to the charity shop and bought a suit, and I bought one of those. I don't know if you remember them, but it's just like, when was it? It was like end of the 80s, 90s. They used to have those little cases that were square, kind of like cases that pinged open and made you look. So I took this case. I bought this case because previously I'd done an interview for the director of Southampton Art Centre, and I'd worn my donkey jacket, and I'd taken this bag with stuff in, and I was just like my kind of like, I thought, and when I closed the door, leaving that interview. And maybe it was my imagination, but I thought I heard the laughter as the door clicked shut, the kind of like, oh, God, he's out there. You know, so I thought, oh, I'm doing something. I just don't look the part. I don't kind of like, so I bought this suit, and I bought this case, and I had nothing in the case.
Nothing in the case?
No, it was empty, yeah. No, it was just purely for show.
A prop.
Yeah.
And then you got the job?
Well, it shows that how shallow Nigel is, really. Yeah, it fell for the...
Fell for the old empty case trick.
Yeah.
And the rest is history, as they say, really.
Yes.
Because you've been here ever since.
Mm. I mean, I thought I'd be here for about 3 years on my meteoric rise to run the Barbican.
Yes.
Which I will still do.
Okay.
I've just been a little, married the local girl.
Yes.
Got held up a bit.
Yes.
You know, along the way.
But that is still a long-held ambition that you will achieve.
They'll come begging for me. You know, I don't have to...
The Barbican in London.
The Barbican. The one in Chelmsford. Chelmsford Barbican. It's very good, you know, there.
Yes.
Yes, they have music and everything.
Do they?
Yes.
I'm surprised that's got to
It's Chelmsford, lovely. To I'm going to run the Barbican.
And when you got the job at Colchester Art Centre, did you immediately...
resign. I did. I offered my resignation as soon as they phoned up. I offered my. May I offer my resignation?
And they said no. So this was your chance to be the director and program everything and anything you wanted to.
Yeah, well, I think I'm a bit more playful now, but I thought it was my chance. It was a proper job, you know. I had to kind of manage people, yeah, and, you know, their jobs were dependent on mine, and I had to kind of, like, continue the disguise of being capable and, you know, interesting and normal. That's been my struggle, really, yeah. You know, just the kind of facade of normality.
Yes.
Now, Ben Howard, keep myself in check.
Ben Howard. Describe working there.
Ben Howard.
A mixture of delight and despair. What have you got to say about that?
Oh, Ben Howard.
Yes. This isn't Ben Howard the pop star.
Oh, isn't it?
No, this is Ben Howard the local disc jockey.
Oh.
And he described working at the Arts Centre as a mixture of delight and despair.
Yes. Well, I suppose I would represent the despair in that conundrum, really. No.
Yes, it must be.
His podcast was beautiful, and he was brilliant there. He fitted what we were trying to do, which was what? Well, you know, it's a movable feast, Tim. It depends, you know.
Why do you think people? Because genuinely, people do love the Arts Centre. And is it the variety of stuff you put on, or is it just that they're trying to impress you?
I think it's
that's great venue.
Oh, thanks. No, I think it's if you're a small venue and you have the luxury of being you know, taking chances and being different. And if you travel the length and breadth of Britain now, the high streets, you know, the corporate identity is, you can be in the high street in Chelmsford or the high street in, you know, wherever. You know, lowest off rock. Anywhere, you know, there's just the kind of like the subway, the Barclays Bank and everything like that. And but, you know, if you said, right, we're going to go to Dundee and we'll go to the Dundee Arts Centre, then you know, we could, I say, right, we're going to go to the bank, we'll go to Barclays Bank in Dundee and we'll go to the Arts Centre in Dundee. You and I would be able to say, right, Barclays Bank, people with clipboards, turquoise, eagle, suggestion of cash. Stashed away somewhere, you know. But Dundee Art Centre might be purpose built, might be a reclaimed building like a church like ours, or a school or a factory. It might be open during the day, it might be closed during the day, it might have food, it might be, you know, it could be all, you know, because it'll be a small collection of people who really care about what they do and can be individual about it. And I think that people, the attraction for the Arts Centre and what I kind of like, what I like about it, and so why I amplify that side of it, is it can be non-corporate, different, isn't beholden to a box office, that can take risks, can be brave enough to put things on that just... Well, incomprehensible.
Incomprehensible,
good or incomprehensible, bad. I think that's kind of like, you know, but sometimes it's really interesting that things that are really, really fabulous are very close to things that are just terrible. Yes. And that's kind of like, it's not a straight line. It doesn't work like that, right. You know. It can be in what people like. And so I think that's a tremendous opportunity. So, for instance, I was talking to Steve Mannix the other day about...
About
cashless box office systems. He loves talk like that.
Yes.
He loves that. That's a kind of... He said his favourite thing is I do tickets and toilets. So, you know, if you get... He lights up like a Christmas tree for saying, I'm thinking I'm doing this kind of stuff. And the idea was like, well, what are you going to do if, like, you know, your cashless system, someone turns up, and they, you know, it's not very art centre, it's not very punk, it's not very rock and roll, saying you've only got, you know, you only do plastic. What, you know, what's your, and I said, yeah, we've got an idea for that. If someone turns up and they says, well, I didn't know about it, I don't know anything about it, this is what we say to them. Well, come in.
And give us your cash.
Just come in. That's the workaround. So, like, I tell you what, next time you're in town, come round and give us, sort us out. Your ticket money, and, you know, I tell you what do you want to drink? Here you go, have a drink, come in, and this one's on us.
And that's the essential difference between the Arts Centre and the Metropolitan.
Yeah, yes, they'll be coming.
Before we started, we didn't elaborate on the conversation. That's where you introduced. No, I'd already seen the Sleaford mods.
Ah, in the specials. Great. Now they are cracking band. They are. See, that's a prop. I would describe that as a proper art centre gig, yeah, because Sleaford they did mods. New work, and that's right up there. One of my favourite gigs. You were there. I know.
Was there?
And
you were impressed.
The atmosphere. Yeah.
So I'd seen them supporting the special.
Had you?
In London, yeah. That's how I've already seen them.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, you've got to check out the Sleaford Mods, folks. We can't say too many of their lyrics in this podcast because it's family friendly, but they are different.
Yeah, but
and
also live.
Like the singer.
Yeah. Yes.
He warms up his voice like a proper singer.
Yeah, so if you don't know the Sleaford Mods and you can't be bothered to go and look at them, and don't, you know, well, if you don't, is that, like, you know, then you see. But the lead singer is a bit like, well, in the mould of Napalm Death in terms of his vocal range.
I think so.
You know, it's a lot of shouting.
A lot. Like, swearing.
Bit of swearing as well. It's like, you know, like, well, it's a kind of like a tsunami of anger, really, isn't it? And which is very pleasant to listen. Anyway, you know, it's totally tuneless in that regard and comes at you like someone, you know, lumping piece of concrete into a kind of like air tunnel. It's like that. It's marvellous. So when afterwards, I said, thank you very much for the show. We all very much enjoyed it. And he was by the things, what's next in the tour? And he said, it's really working well. Now I'm doing my, I've been doing my singing lessons. And I wasn't sure whether he was joking or not. You know, it's like one of those... the singing lessons. How are they going? Good. Yeah, you know. But so he does his singing vocal warm-ups with honey. La 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 la.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And so goes on stage. Time. Well, what I really love is the other guy.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Who just brilliant. Stands by a computer with a bottle, with a very distinct and a cap, doing a very distinctive kind of like side to side movement.
But very, marvellous. Very, not exaggerated movement at all, is it?
You wouldn't call it flamboyant.
No, not flamboyant at all. Check out the Sleaford Mods.
I don't think his role model is Bez.
No, he's the antithesis of Bez.
I thought you were going to say Antiques Roadshow, because Bez was on...
Twice in one podcast.
No, he was on... Bez was on... Bargain Hunt. Celebrity Bargain Hunt. And he got his missus... To buy the stuff he's chosen.
He
got disqualified.
Good old
place. Oh, I'd love to do Bargain Hunt.
Yeah, would you?
I'd love it, yeah. Yeah, well, I love Bargain Hunt. It's one of my favourites. You know when they say, oh, he's working at home, it means I'm watching Bargain Hunt.
Yeah. I only watch the ending because it's just before the news.
Oh.
Where they kick their legs up.
Oh yes, that's right. Yes, yes. They do a little. They do a sort of like.
Yes,
that's right. Started by Tim Wannacott, I think.
All the best people. Tim.
What's the name? FOX, the lead singer in FOX.
Yes.
Zoe Kent.
Yes.
She was on Bargain Hunt, and she's brilliant. And it's like, oh mate, and so I watched that, and but Tim Wannacott, of course, was sacked.
For.
Well, we don't know, but we think it's for
dodgy
something like that. Right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
You might want to check that out on your
previously, of course, it was started with David Dickinson, Orange Man.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now,
there's not enough Orange Men.
Apart from your incredible success and diversity at the Art Centre,
should we just think about that for a moment?
Yes.
The incredible. Remember? Success, yes. I think we're talking.
Indeed. Mm. Do you remember we managed to hoodwink the Arts Council into giving you the job at First Sight?
Oh, yes, that's right, yes.
That was another,
the other suitcase.
Yeah.
The empty suitcase trick.
And you turned around its fortune. Even Sally Shaw, the current director of First Sight. Gives you credit for turning around and getting people to come into First.
Well,
which they weren't doing pretty.
No, it did get in a bit of a pickle. But I mean, you know, what I said is a very simple thing: is that the art in there was always like top notch.
Mm.
I thought it was really kind of like, you know, they had a very good gallery space and some very good art in there and some very good people choosing the art. But it didn't work. The building wasn't working as a social space for people to go in and make a noise or make a mess or meet people or get drunk or do all those things that, you know, because I'm working at the Arts Centre. A lot of the affection around the Arts Centre is because people have had, you know, they have stories there. So First Sight needed to have some people in it so that they could meet someone else, that they could get caught snogging in the toilets or, you know, get drunk or get off with someone
or play like, crazy golf.
Yeah, or play Richard the nine holes of Richard Domenici. Yeah, yes, that's indeed. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Who is a marvellous artist.
Yeah. Hunt Dark Cafe. And
you use him a lot, don't you?
Yeah, I like Richard. Richard messes up things in the very most delightful ways. A disruptor and a rascal. And that's kind of
why
like,
we like it.
Yeah, that's why we like it.
Bit so
like,
you did get people in.
Well, yeah, it was a bit more of a kind of like a playful and social environment of making it more noisy and messy. So one of the first things I did was to, they were showing me around on the second day and there was this knackered old van. It was out of the back. I mean, it was properly knackered. And it was like the front half was a different half than the back half. You know, so it's a proper Essex. Someone had crunched it together. I don't know how these things work. And I said, let's put it in the front then. And they were like,
no,
and I said, yeah, no, let's put it in the front, you know. And they were like, what are you talking about? And, you know, I said, well,
I'm the boss.
You, put it in the front pretty much. Like, we reversed it in.
And I remember it was great.
He sat there and said, what are you doing that for? And I said, because we've been, like, you know, disruptive and playful. We're introducing stuff into this kind of thing that everyone would be talking about that. What's he done that for? And, like, you know, can critique it in all sorts of playful ways. You could be serious about it or you could say, but it just felt like it was, you know, time to disrupt the of...
Definitely.
Cathedral kind of academia like reference. It felt to didn't feel like anyone had any ownership over it, you know. But it'd be fine, and you know what Sally's done is, you know, that's taken that kind of like idea, but made it beautiful in that way, you know.
In the worst case. And she acknowledges this without the work you put.
Well, you know, we pushed open that little door, but also that you know, is Kath Wood, is the person who built it.
Absolutely,
you know, it was a triumvirate of three women that, you know, Andrea Hill, Andrea Stark, Kath Wood, were the drivers of that project, and that it will live for, you know, hundreds of years. When my little kind of cameo in there will be long forgotten, and but that it felt right at the time, but it also felt great fun to do and great fun to stop doing and go back and have some fun at the Arts Centre. Yeah.
Right, before we carry on, we have this section in the podcast called My Favourite Things.
I see.
And I'm going to throw out some...
stuff
at you.
Oh, I see.
What your favourite thing is.
I deny everything.
And then you can deny everything afterwards. So we'll bang through these very quickly. There are 11 of them.
Oh, crikey, are there?
Yes.
All right. Are these the ones you showed me before?
No, I haven't shown you these in advance at all. If you've listened to previous podcasts, you might get some of them.
I've put some
in, especially.
Oh, have you? Because, you know, I've listened to the other scintillating podcasts that you've made.
So, favourite.
That one with Ben Howard, by the way, was brilliant. Oh, that's on all the time in our house.
Good.
Yeah. It's like on repeat. Fantastic. Oh, the Free Festival. Yeah. Great. He got absolutely top drawer stories. It was a beautiful vocal story, but he's got top drawer stories that he probably couldn't tell
you. I'm going to do a sequel.
Are you? Get him to tell you about Waiting for the Cash. Where was that dodgy bar down in Queen Street? Didn't they do some TV program about it? What's it called?
I don't want to be sued of this.
Well, you should have asked me, engine.
Favourite things. We're doing favourite things.
Get him to tell a story about Waiting for the Cash. Guy who'd sponsored it. Yeah, that's great.
Favourite play.
And sacking his cleaner. Get him to sack your cleaner. King Lear.
Book.
First
thing that comes in your head. No
Christmas ball. Carol.
Oh, of course.
Well, wouldn't it be? Although I've got a soft spot for Heart of Darkness.
Oh, right. Okay.
Wouldn't be quite the same if I did that at Christmas, would it?
No.
The horror.
Film.
Harvey, James Stewart.
Oh, yes, of course.
Closely followed
by The Rabbit.
Yeah.
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 Percy followed by?
Carry On Screaming.
Carry On Screaming.
Carry On Screaming, because when you're screaming, I know that you're dreaming of me.
The only Carry On film that Harry H. Corbett did.
Yeah. Very good. Peter Butterworth as Watson. Foul Feet Smell. Ooh, something horrible. Odd Bod.
Yes.
John Pertwee.
Who was Bernard Breslau?
Bernard Breslau was the... he was the butler.
Was he the butler?
Yeah, he was the butler.
Brilliant, Karen, I'm screaming.
Yeah.
I think we know this. TV show?
Dad's Army.
Of course. Yeah. Favourite song?
Favourite song? That's a great one. What would that be? Don't know. First thing that comes into my head would be the I Shall Be Released by Nina Simone.
I think Tom Robinson Band did a cover of that.
Yeah, well, I've seen Bob Dylan twice.
Yes.
And he did it. Yeah, I saw him at Blackbush and I saw him at Wembley Arena.
Have you booked him for the Arsenal?
I'll tell you what, I don't think anyone... Apparently he's terrible now. He sounds like a bee. Stuck in a jar, people say. You should book the tribute, it'd be better than him.
Yeah. Favourite band?
The Fall.
This is the one that's getting everybody, so I expect you to be right on this. Favourite famous person with the name Anthony?
Tony Hancock.
Aloysius, of course.
Yeah.
Favourite ever Watford Football Club player?
Luther!
Of course. I knew you were going to say Luther Blissett. I said to myself before this interview started, he'll say Luther Blissett.
Luther Missett, as he was
Luther
known.
Luther Missett.
Yeah.
He did play for England, didn't he?
Yeah. He scored a hat-trick once for England. Yeah, yeah.
Favourite hat?
Favourite hat would be the Captain Mannering's cap.
Oh, gosh. And favourite ever... This is seamless, folks. Favourite ever Dad's Army episode?
Young at Heart.
Is that?
Young at Heart. That's the one where they're threatened with joining the ARP because they're too old. And Fraser gets all his embalming stuff out and fills their cheeks out. Yeah. So it's got Godfrey, like, you know, and at the end, they've all dyed their hair. It rains. And all the kind of like
that is a great
stuff, yeah.
And because I know you're a bit of a sharp snooker player, who's your favourite ever snooker player?
Alex Higgins.
Of course. I knew you were going to say that as well.
Yeah, Alex Higgins.
Great
Higgins proper.
Alex Hurricane Higgins.
Yeah, absolutely
the
proper.
Late, great.
Yeah.
Now, let's move forward to the future.
To the future?
Back
you're on a roll.
I am.
He looked up on a search engine. Well done.
How many poems?
Wasn't you on the electric interweb?
Something like that.
Marvellous.
Yes, I had to be helped.
Marvellous.
How many poems had ever been written? Because I thought you might do the whole all of them before you had to stop and go back to the art.
399 today.
399.
Yeah.
So 400.
Tomorrow.
I've worked
it out. You're just moving forward.
You've still got a few to go, according to the interweb.
Yes, that's right. What I said was I will do a poem every day on the 17th of March until the Art Centre reopens, thinking it would be about 3 weeks.
Yes. And here we are, 399 days later.
I feel sorry for the people who are getting them in their inbox every morning.
Every day.
Yeah.
And I like them.
Yeah, dear me. just encouraging
the ones
people.
That are under a minute.
Yeah. I know. If it goes on over that, it's kind of like,
come
out of that. What else is anyone else doing?
But you did a Gerard Manley Hopkins.
Yeah, you're the one you asked for. Yeah, fantastic. Pied Beauty. Now, I did a John Clare one.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan of John. But that Pied Beauty one, it's reminded me of John Clare because he's one of the most underrated, I think, poets that write about nature. Mm-hmm. And he did when I was invited to speak at Peter Chillingworth's Oyster Feast.
The mayor, Peter Chillingworth?
Yeah. And the theme was town and country.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I got asked, I think the gig, I call it the gig, the Oyster Feast, whatever, you know. it was on it in the, like, the second week of October, is it?
Yeah.
About that, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Peter Chillingworth asked me to do this about, 7th of October.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, had all the hallmarks of, I've asked absolutely everybody else, I could possibly think of, but I'm now down to the absolute dregs. Would you like to speak at the thing? It's like, yeah, okay then.
All right.
And I was thinking, we've put you on last. Oh, God, mate, you know, what am I going to say? I've got nothing to say about Town and Country. I've got to be supposed to be funny as well, I suppose. Oh, dear. But fortunately, the person before me was so dull. So some long, long 25-minute speech about breeding fish, I think. I couldn't really make it out because I was a bit apprehensive thinking, yes. You know, I'm on next. But I was, you know, it's much worse if the person before you is, you know, opens up a little bit of a door. Anyway, my key, the money shot in my thing was going to be this John Clare poem that I'd got ready. And it's a beautiful poem. And if you give it a little bit of welly, you know, in the moot hall, everyone quiet, you know. And so I started doing it, and there was a really loud person talking, you know. I was thinking, shut up. Will you shut up? And it was the guy that owns Jumbo, Mr. Flatford.
Yes.
So
the John Clare poem was...
Yeah, it fell on stony ground.
How awful.
Yes.
But
John Clare, anyway, that was a sort of story about poems. And but 400th poems tomorrow.
I remember you told me that you were struggling to find poems that weren't written by old dead white men.
Yeah, well,
so you've managed to get some in, haven't you?
Well, if you buy the anthologies, the old anthologies, John Agard, there's some brilliant Grace Nichols, and there's some
Caroline Duffy. Have you done?
Caroline Duffy have done a couple by her. Yeah. Yeah.
So there are others.
It's just the old anthologies that you get. You know, you pick an anthology off yourself, and unless it's kind of like done in the last 10 years, it will be nearly all dead white men.
Yeah.
You know, and some of those poems are fantastic. John Clare, I've just said, you know, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. But if you're doing 400, and I'm kind of like, you know, one of the things, big things, is to try and hear these new voices at the Arts Centre. It's fantastic that, you know, we're in an area where you hear people who talk about, you know, sexuality, identity, trans community, the disabled community. You know, it's just like you hear those voices and they're really strong, really powerful. And so should be represented in my little kind of poetry project.
And is there a special one for the 400?
I think we're going to do one at Reggie Road.
Oh, brilliant.
Mm.
Your son.
Yeah, he doesn't know that yet. But
okay.
He,
And right, we're time running away with this, but the point of this podcast is
hasn't it rushed by?
The point of the podcast, and I'd like your opinion.
Yes,
is why is Colchester?
What is the point of the podcast?
Yeah, there is that.
There is that.
Why is Colchester such a magnet for culture and art? And you know, because we are.
Well,
it's a provincial town in Essex.
Yeah.
And suddenly we've got all this,
you know, that thing
art
I was,
and culture going.
That thing I was talking about, if the person before you is terrible, it makes you shine.
Yes.
Well, if you come to Colchester, you've got Chelmsford, haven't you?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, Chelmsford.
Yes.
The city of Chelmsford.
Oh.
And then you get to Colchester.
Yeah. Yeah. What could go wrong
there? What could go wrong there?
And, of course, you've got the beautiful... I keep being told by Nikki that I mention Clacton too much in these podcasts.
Really?
But we have got Clacton down the road as well, which is a cultural oasis.
Well, when I talked about going to the Barbican in Chelmsford, I really meant going to... Is it Clacton or is it Frinton, where Darren, who did a lovely, beautiful podcast with you, he interviewed someone called Francis Golightly.
He was at Clacton.
Was he at Clacton?
He did the summer show at Clacton.
The summer show at Clacton by Francis Golightly.
I've seen many of Francis Golightly productions.
Have you?
Yes. And of course, my dad appeared at the Westfield Theatre for years and years.
See, this is the proper stuff.
This is the stuff. Want.
This is what they want.
This is
old school variety. Saw players
and
ventriloquists and everything like that.
Anthony Roberts. We'll be appearing at a poem near you very soon. And thanks.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great being here.
All right.
Join us again soon for another edition of the Cultural Colchester podcast.